Hi, I'm Zarika Himilakani, a producer and managing partner at Some Fine Day Pigs. I'm both German and Kenyan, and I'm excited to welcome you to this special podcast series. At Some Fine Day Pigs, we help emerging filmmakers across Africa, and especially Kenya, to tell their unique stories through film. We're proud to work with incredible creatives from across the continent. And in this podcast, we invite them to share their personal journey. A special thank you goes to the support of the German Ministry for Economic Cooperation and Development and the GIZ. In this episode, we're exploring Inheritance, a deeply personal and poetic story about identity, shame, and healing. The film follows Kava, a young woman returning to her rural home to bury her grandfather who rejected her at birth. What begins as a strained family reunion soon transforms into a mystical journey. Guided by an unlikely companion, the village madman, Kava enters a liminal space where she confronts her past, challenges her pain, and begins to reclaim her self-worth. I'm speaking with director Barbara Menishi, producer Ivy Kiru, and writer Guatilo Mawio about intergenerational wounds, cultural taboos, and the liberating power of magical realism in African storytelling. Let's dive in. So, besides the all-female team for Inheritance, to which we will get to in a moment, what is very significant that all three of you travel between art spaces. So Ivy makes jewelry and is a producer, Guatilo as a poet and a filmmaker, and Barbara from photography, visual art, and filmmaking. So all of you travel spaces. Does that come naturally?
I can say for me, I do enjoy it. It calms me down. I love working with my hands, and jewelry in general, like, come easy for me to make. But then trying to do that and monetize that skill, for me, that's the hard part, because now I'm concentrating on my filmmaking journey and I'm finding it hard to sort of balance the two. And now I just do it to help me, like, ease my mind off of work or the stress of producing and fundraising and being a storyteller.
My first thing was, I used to be a singer. I am a singer sometimes. and I would write songs and then found poetry and then went into that. So it's kind of been, what is the need of the moment? That is also a way for me to learn. Like, I'm currently editing a poem now and it's forcing me to learn logic. So does it come easy? No, but it's an adventure. And that is cool. I think, like, it's a good way to open my imagination. I was recently at a festival that contains strong language, and one of the poets, Matt Abbott, had us thinking about poetry and sculpture, which is not something I would have even imagined. So I'm currently encouraging myself to explore.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara, for you?
I love being a multifaceted artist. I remember even when I started photography, people were like, so what are you going to concentrate on? Then I was just like, please do not put me in a box. Like, I genuinely enjoy photography. I genuinely enjoy film. I genuinely enjoy writing and reading. So it's like when you have this one strong tree and it's got all these branches and all these roots, they're all interconnected. But that willingness to try new things and to fail, the best thing also to show up with is this beginner's mindset, where you can face each day and be like, ha, brand new day. I have all these tools in this creative playground to show up for. What will I choose? And to just ground yourself in that.
Yeah. So speaking about every day in the morning and thinking about what will I express today, Guatilo, how did the story of Inheritance find you?
So as a poet, it kind of bothers me that I've never made a poetry film. So I started with a poem that I had written, which was also based on an interview moment that I had with my granddad. years and years ago, maybe 2007. And so that was the kind of the impetus. Inheritance is this conflict between a granddad and his granddaughter. And it's culture. It's not just their personalities. It's what colonialism has done. He's got these Christian, puritanical sort of values, and his granddaughter defies that. There's a natural point of conflict if we hold different beliefs. And so making inheritance was a point of like, this person has started in this place because of everything that has happened before. And this other character has this life story that leads her down a certain other path. Where do they meet? I think it was that year that I read Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude and was consuming Mexican film, which has this beautiful magical realism thing. And also like been thinking about death and also thinking about how we reconcile with other spiritual ways of being. Speaking as Amkamba, what is Akamba way of being in the world?
And how did that journey continued when Barbara and Ivy came into the mix?
I was especially interested in working with a director whose foundational wheelhouse was the visual. When I'm working as a director, like that's the place I'm always leaning on, the cinematographer, because I don't feel I have the vocabulary there. And of course, I knew Ivy's work before. She's worked with Lydia Matata before, and I'd been following her work with her. And I was very privileged that both Barbara and Ivy locked in and then also wanted to work on this project and breathe life into it. Barbara connected in her own way very personally, and Ivy was up for, I think it was like, so how are we going to do magical realism? Like, how are we going to do it? Do we have the budget? And I was very glad to have Ivy like make that her problem.
So you mentioned that it's a story which is rooted or evolving around the Akamba culture. Barbara and Ivy, do you have a connection to that culture?
My cultural connection to inheritance was immediate because I absolutely, definitely connected to our protagonist, Kava. One of the key things about her is that she doesn't know her mother tongue. And I do come from a different cultural tribe in Kenya, but mainly grew up in Nairobi. And a year before we did Inheritance, I had gone back to the upcountry, and you know, our film also starts at a funeral, and it was my grandmother's funeral, and I hadn't been there in 23 years. So all these layers of culture were just reflective in the film. And similarly, I had been going through an internal process for the past 7 years, even before then, where I was looking at my life and seeing, what of my mother do I have? What of my grandmother? What of my father? What is mine? What do I need to unlearn? Where can I find my voice in time with where I am right now? So I would say it was a cultural context of lineage, of legacy, and of the feminine, and of whatever wisdom or whatever trauma and wounds that have come through the family with us. So it was very impactful.
You hadn't seen your family for 23 years, or you hadn't been up country for 23 years?
I hadn't gone up country for 20 years because I have been born and raised in Nairobi. And my dad comes from Western Kenya. My mother also comes from Western Kenya. My dad comes from Kakamega. My mom comes from Kitale. But in 1999, I remember it was the last time I've been to my dad's side because both my grandmother and grandfather on my dad's side passed on. And my grandfather on my mother's side had also passed on, but my grandmother was living in Nairobi with us. So being home at that time and connecting with my grandmother, and sometimes the glimpses and things you can learn from them and makes you go into, why is my grandmother like this? Why is my mother like this? Why am I like this? What are those elements? So it was truly eye-opening for me. And I could just relate to the character, and I could also start envisioning the scene and everything, because funerals are interesting in Kenya. depending on, I think, sometimes what cultural background you come from, but just generally there's this vibe of homecoming to yourself and just learning new things and being opened up to things you never knew before.
So that sounds like having 2 feet rooted on different grounds, like one in the modern world and one in your cultural home. Is that as contradictory as it sounds?
There's something also Ngwathilo mentioned, and that was in the script, and where Umao, the grandfather, is so Christian and stuck on his ways and how he sees things. And then there's this rich, also cultural, traditional arena where has been sort of demonized in most of our cultural practices. And I also got to witness that sometimes before giving a speech at a funeral and saying, yes, she accepted Christ before she died. And in my heart, I'm just thinking, but is there a space where you can look at spirituality and religion and appreciate the ancestral wisdom and the spirituality of our culture, but also understand that I'm a child in this now, but I'm also a child of my past and my lineage, and they can come together and coexist. But I'm actually also very curious on Ngwathilo and Ivy's take on this being a child of two worlds and this third space we actually are in right now.
I think you said it really well, Barbara. Our protagonist is born and raised in Nairobi, you know, doesn't carry that. And so a lot of us grew up with this idea that, and our parents, actually our grandparents also, they had to abandon the old and become new people in order to be acceptable in this new world. And I'm really questioning that, like, even just cinematically in terms of our stories and what is possible for that, for us to speak about. Because what it is a silencing. It means that there's things that you cannot talk about. There's a kind of a denial of self and heritage. And I was very interested in facing that head on and making a film that speaks into that space of silence. There is a third way, to answer your question, but we don't know what it looks like. I mean, I don't know what it looks like for me. And that's the journey that I'm on personally. And it's the journey that Kava is also coming to in the film, I think.
So what does the third way journey look like in the film? What is the artistic answer to the third way?
For me, it's everything I've been feeling through this liminal space. And I feel cinema, visual storytelling, is that alchemical space where personally, as a filmmaker, but also as a human being who's navigating these deep questions, hey, how can I connect to this and explore this? This past 2 years has just broken me open and connected me further and deeper to my truth. I recall growing up being like, there's this thing I want to say, but then you're scared to bring it out. And I got to this point, especially with Inheritance, where I was just like, insert swear word, covered in fudge and chocolate and very nice things, where I was just like, I'm going to have my cake and eat it. And I understand this is an internal and an external process. And there's value to how I show up with the world and how I communicate, because for me, animism is very real. The world is talking to us. And I'm just like, are you listening? Are you listening to our weather systems? Are you listening to the trees? Are you listening to the landscape? So when we have this film where in the beginning, the central theme was the tree, and this film has roots in ecofeminism. And for me, that's part of my intrinsic values. It was just like, yes, this is the third space in which I can look at my connections to my lineage and my legacy, to society, past and present and now. This is calibrating new narratives of what we want. You know how they say we are writing a new earth? And are we what our ancestors wanted us to be? And even when we think about the ancestors we want to be, what is the legacy we want to live? So for me, it's that question of creating and living and being, doing all that.
You mentioned self-centering, Barbara. Where does that come from?
There's something inherently, social, culturally, I'm going to speak from the Kenyan cultural context. There's sometimes this unseen written rules of, okay, I'm going to start with the one I think that's globally, where girls are meant to be seen but not heard. When you speak your true voice, you're quick to be silenced, or you're told to be perfect means not to be seen or to be heard. One thing I feel also inheritance is we have this thing where we all fire. We all fire. I'm going to bring astrology here. We all fire signs. Ayobi is a fire sign. I'm a fire sign. Ngwathelo is a fire sign. And in the past, I witnessed as a child, when I expressed my full self, it was met with disapproval. And I subconsciously learned to play small. So even though I created my own photography career, I went out and explored and did things and still do, part of me knew at the back of my head, I was just like, Barbara, you're not really showing fully up as you will be. Like, there was this Barbara means the strange one, where it was just like, yes, I was showing up to the best that I was, but there was something, a voice beneath was saying, girl, come on now, there's something that wants to come through you, you know, let it out. So at the time after I did Sensate, I started really deeply looking in the ways I had self-censored myself. And you also get to a point with filmmaking and how you're taking responsibility with showing up in the world. It's not about you. There's something bigger going on. And it got to a point where it was like, evolve or die. So even when Ngwathelo was also, we have the funeral and was talking about, you look at death and you look at which part of me wants to die so that something new can come through. And when you can co-create and work in collaboration with people and you start seeing and sensing that our stories are so similar, you're just like, you know what? Damn the self-censorship. I'm just going to show up and be my authentic, radiant, shining self. And yes, my truth or my way of seeing might not apply to everyone, but I'm not denying the truth of your background, but I believe we can coexist and we can learn. But it doesn't serve us as a film industry, as creatives in the micro and the macro, to self-censor ourselves. Let it all come out. Even if it's like, oh, this feels ugly and this doesn't feel like it fits right, there's value in showing up fully that way.
So Barbara spoke about topics of ecofeminism, of how it was to overcome self-censorship. And I want to ask you, how is it different to work in a team where the main creators, the scriptwriter, the director, and the producer are female? Is that different to any other experience you had so far?
For me, what has been different, because I have worked with like a female director, writer, you know, as one person, she was writing and directing, and that's Lydia. The difference for me was working with a writer who is different from the one who's directing and trying to mesh what the writer or the originator of the idea had in mind and how the director has interpreted what this script or story is in their own creative way. And for me, that has been a journey, and a beautiful one, honestly, because I think we have shown each other so much grace and compassion on how we give feedback, how we want our ideas to be implemented, what within our creative space are we willing to dive into and what are we willing to let go of. And I applaud Ngwathelo for like being able to let go and take a step back and let this baby grow and evolve in however way this vision or these two other humans that have come into your story are gonna drive the story. That has been a huge learning curve for me as a producer, honestly. You know, and I am willing to put myself in that space again, where I definitely want to work with two different creatives and mesh a story, mesh our visions.
Ngwathelo has spoken about a natural point of conflict earlier in a different context, but I want to put it in the context of your production, because we hear a lot about collaboration, about companionship and female empowerment. Was there a natural point of conflict in your production?
It was really everyone trying so hard to make this the best possible project and story that could possibly be. And it was so natural because we all have different styles. And we had, I guess, to match all our energies and to see where we're going to compromise. What cross are we willing to die on and which ones can we let go as individuals? And all that was just to serve the story. And for me, that was a beautiful conflict that we were having.
Yeah, I can fully own and claim that I was probably the one who was like, no, Akambas, don't do that. We are like this. And, you know, no, Akambas would never sing like that. As Ivy was saying, like, fully, you know, in service of the story and just trying to hold the baby and make sure that the baby comes out with 10 fingers and 10 toes and, you know, a left brain, a right brain, you know, kidneys, liver, all the things, you know, lungs. And not that anyone wasn't interested in all of that. It's just, you know, I guess everyone is going to focus on the things that they're that come close to them. Like Barbara had the most stunning images. Shout out to a cinematographer as well. But the story to work, I can't take the story to Akamba land and be kicked out, you know. Like that's my worst nightmare. It has to work in Akamba land. I'm like, I can't go and like make this huge effort to make a Akamba film, not knowing Kikamba myself, be sure. And Barbara cared about it. Ivy cared about it. I also knew that I had to hold that side to an extent.
So did you learn something new about the Kamba in you?
I knew very little about Akamba spirituality. So, I mean, like I was there reading John Beatty because, you know, we go into a sort of afterlife scenario. How would that happen in genuine Akamba-ness? Like you can invent things, sure, and we did. But like, how would it work in Akamba culture? And that was my responsibility as the writer also. We had those conversations about the different kinds of Kikamba. Some of our actors came from a particular side, you know, that's Kitui, from Machakos. How do we work with these sides, with these different accents, you know, like regional accents? How can we use them inside the story? I had conversations with my aunties, people I did not know. You know how you just seek out, like, how does this work? The research for this was intensive. And also, I mean, I think we were really lucky with our actors also taught us and also helped us stay accountable. I mean, I spoke to somebody in Matinyani, somewhere in Kitui. Like, it's very far. And there's a lot of vested interest from ourselves, but also from our communities into making the best film possible. And I haven't felt so supported, actually, as a filmmaker. Yeah, so that's been really beautiful, actually.
And have you brought the film to the region?
Not yet. We're getting there. We're getting there. We will, though.
One of the things I wanted to dive into a little bit, because it touches on all the topics which we spoke about earlier, is names. Kenyans have a variety of names. Where does that come from? How does that manifest in day-to-day life? And what does it all mean? You know, like Barbara explained earlier about how now she's going to go by...
Halyesa?
Yes.
Halyesa for me was the name of a grandmother I never met. But one thing that resonates with me is the rainmaker aspect. And for me, I tie the rainmaker when I think about my own ecological self, the fire in me, the water in me, the earth in me. And I love that. And I wanted to bring it out. For a while, I remember I had been stuck on Barbara because every time I'd introduce myself and, you know, maybe I'd say I'm Barbara and I don't say anything, blah, blah, blah. And then we continue talking. And then later on, it would come out, you're a photographer. And people would go, Barbara Minishi. And I'd be like, yeah. But I felt as much as I had my middle name, it's a very beautiful name, Halyesa. And I felt with everything I've gone through, everything I've inherited, everything I've learned, the new narratives I'm building up, I am willing to switch my names. They still all belong together. It's like a solid foundation. It's like us in the team as inheritors. Names are so powerful, and the way we name things and the way we are intentional about it and what it carries, it matters so much. But also being willing to rename yourself.
Yes. I've also had seasons of like, I want to live into a particular name in a particular season. Like I need that name. And like, if I ever have a child, I feel like I might give them 5 or 6 names. So they have like a lot of optionality because, and traditionally people did have, they transitioned through names as different characters kind of came out. So names are absolutely powerful. And I know we spent a lot of time naming and renaming our characters in Inheritance. Because sometimes you like you just kind of say a name without thinking of what it is and what it can mean for who you're interacting with. And Kaba's mother names her Kaba, which is not a common name, but it means better, you know? And this idea that what is past is good, but this is better, like that you can improve. And I think that's like a very motherly instinct, like you want your child to have a better opportunity than you did. And that's one of the dreams of the film. And myself as Angwatilo also. Angwatilo means to hold on to.
When it came to the time for doing the credits, I was just like, you know what? This newer, braver, creative person that has come through from this experience, let me now adopt this new name and let's see how the journey takes me. And Inheritance is actually a real inheritance. And Inheritance has also given me the chance to rename myself and recommit and reclaim another archetype of myself and to bring it into the world. So names are just magic.
Is it also a question about how would Kenyans look like today if there had been no colonialism?
I was recently watching the series of shorts on Kizazi Moto on Disney Plus. Disney Triggerfish, they did a series of short animated films. And some of them, there's a moment in this film from Zimbabwe where there's a parallel universe between, you know, this present that where Great Zimbabwe is a ruin and, you know, colonialism has happened. And there's this other space where it never happened. And like, they're completely on the forefront of tech and there's good vibes and colors and everything. So figuring out how to move after colonialism is the reality that I am trying to navigate, right? It's a shared problem. Obviously, you have Black Panther, you have all these things that explore what would Africa be if it didn't have that as part of its history. And that is absolutely a way to explore that space of what we can be.
Abby or Barbara, do you want to add to what Gwatilu just said?
For me, Inheritance is less about what we've inherited politically, but it's more on focusing on the now and where I stand. So here I am as an adult. What are the things I have inherited? What aspects of patriarchy or misogyny, what internalized neocolonialism do I carry? Because I recognize growing up, like I didn't see myself in cinema. When I think about my favorite heroines growing up, when I think about the adventures of Alice in Wonderland or Pippa Longstocking or Punky Brewster, all those things I watched growing up, they were from the West, you know? So Inheritance for me also represents this point in time where, right, we know about these legends of Siokimau, we know about Mekatilili, we know about Wangari Maathai, right? So using the archetype of these women to write new narratives from the inside out and utilizing the same ethics and values that they have, understanding that we are children of two worlds, the past and the present, and that we are here, and also AI is here. I love saying that AI is not just artificial intelligence, it is also African intelligence, it is also ancestral intelligence. All those things come together in this ecological landscape that's so juicy. And oh my gosh, the power I feel. And by the way, before I go on, let me just thank Gwatilo and Ivy again. As a director, when you have this foundational collaboration and co-creative space where we can each show up in our power, where we are heard, where we understand we're going together in a common route, you get that validation where we are creating new narratives, but we are also showing up in these new narratives. And I can see the growth in myself, and I can see the growth in each of them. And the things we will each get to do individually and collectively in the future is because of inheritance and the new narrative that this movie, the way it brought us together and where we are jumping us up from, has just sparked from.
Ivy, the space which Barbara just described, what does it need to create the space?
I think a lot of understanding and compassion generally, because yes, productions can be stressful and managing people in general can be so stressful, but like sitting down and listening to their perspective and understanding what they are trying to say, even when you don't agree, I feel like that is just like the human thing to do in any collaboration. And I keep saying we're literally in a relationship. And however I would like treat my friend or my partner, I would definitely give the same grace to the director or the writer or any other creative that is working with me. And a lot of people find it hard. It's always about them, my idea, my way, my intentions, my perspective. Yeah, I keep saying, like, there are fights you're willing to have and there are things, you know what? It's not, for me, it doesn't take away from my work or who I am. And I can give that person that compromise, you know, if it means a lot to them. I try to do that to a lot of collaborations that I have, especially with creatives. Oof.
Ivy, you just said that like you're not a creative. You are a creative full and through. You know, I'm just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no, but like also like you need to be objective as a producer as well at the end of the day. I mean, you are a creative, but you can't fully be a creative. You still have to think logically and be like, okay, we have this grand idea, but practically, what can be done? You know, what capacity do we have to do this? Yeah.
You've described, you know, the kind of space you're operating in and the spirit and the atmosphere which you live and breathe in. Which factors do you think contribute for a space like this to exist?
I think it's also a very personal thing. Not every producer creates that space, right? Or is willing to put their crew or their collaborators as a human
who what
as a human and not as a project, because a lot of people see it as a project. You are just in service of the project, so whatever it takes you, whether it's your mental health or it's your well-being, that's going to be compromised, but you need to have sleepless nights just for this project. And like for me, it's like, no, this project is not going to happen unless these humans I'm with are in there at 100%, right? If we have like standard policies in place, maybe then it's going to regulate a lot of how producers work or create space for people. If you have unions that you can go to and be like, hey, I felt like I wasn't treated right on this production, this and this happened, having a super HR, right? If the person you go to is your producer, who is making you work 24 hours, then you're stuck. You're stuck in that cycle and no one is out looking for you. You have to look for yourself. And if someone is not human enough to understand that this is not right or not good, then I guess that's why policies are there, unions are there, there are spaces where you can go to.
I have to say, like, Ivy did an incredible job. I mean, we had a child on set as well. And, you know, it's always delicate working with children. I mean, but this child had everything. And I mean, and so much trust, even from their parents, I have to say.
Thank you so much for, like, acknowledging. And,
yeah, I mean, props, Ivy.
Yeah, thank you, ladies.
So it sounds as if you're speaking about values, Ivy. And all three of you seem to be deeply rooted in values. How did you discover what your values are?
I've been an actor in this space and been on very kind of chaotic sets. So I know my share of what Ivy is talking about in terms of when things go sideways. But, you know, I think we definitely were deliberate about talking about it when we got together and we're like, okay, what's the environment that we want to work in? Because we've never worked together before. And I'm appreciative that there was a space to talk about it and not assume that, you know, some things were not worth saying.
And as much as I would like to attribute this to the female team, I must say that in our conversations with the other teams, that really came across, like whether it was male, female, male, male. It seems to be really something which is more and more happening nowadays and in general, not only in female spaces. Am I wrong?
I came to the Sunpine Day program. When we were in the making classes, one key thing was showing up with honesty and integrity. And even though there were values I already came with, every day is an opportunity to lean deeper into honesty and integrity. And can you remain in integrity to the values of the team? Are you committed to still having a nurturing environment while still leaning into conflict and uncertainty? Because for me, that's where the greatest growth comes through. But I also recognize that in the Kenyan filmmaking industry, there are some people who are writing new narratives, and they're bringing with them a way of working together that I'm just so deeply excited about. And yes, I can say as Team Inheritance, we did show up with that. And in fact, I'm also going to confess, on the last day of shooting, I cried. Because it was such an amazing set. And the way each and every cast member and crew member showed up, the way you can show up, you know, sometimes they say director leadership role, but for me, leadership role is also listening and learning from other people. I continue to learn and listen so much from what was established just from this inheritance. And I can say, yes, I'm going to keep on going on and on about inheritance, but their new narratives, their new policies that are being created, I can trust and see that even the Kenya Film Board and Kenya Film Commission, and there's a shift right now. We're already in the trenches with things really powerfully changing.
And can I ask all three of you how the experience of making Inheritance has it changed the conversations you're having with your own families?
Honestly, I'm also probably a Kava. I am the girl, the urban girl who has been born and raised in Nairobi, who can barely speak her mother tongue, who barely know much about my heritage and my culture besides what I have learned in school, you know, and this made me realize I want to learn more and I need to be intentional as well. You know, I can't sit here and be like, yeah, you know, this is how I've been raised up. Yeah, my mom didn't speak to me in Kikuyu, so that's how I don't know how to speak Kikuyu. I'm an adult now. I can't keep blaming my relatives or my parents or anything. And I've been trying, actually, I have been learning Kikuyu, like I can understand, but I've been deliberately wanting to speak Kikuyu with my mom. You know, she's been like my teacher now, and deliberately wanting to go to my grandmother's place and have conversations. I'm not perfect, but I do want to show up for her as well, because she's there, she's alive, and not so many people are going to get that chance. I haven't met my grandfathers from both sides of my family because they passed away before I was born. But I have my grandmother who can tell me so much, so much of what my family lineage has been, what my heritage is, where my name has come from, because I'm named after her. And I have such a unique Kikuyu name that's not common in Kikuyu, Wakiru. But, you know, and like in learning, what does Wakiru mean? Where did that come from? And I learned the other day, I am from a man named Kiru. So my grandmother is the child of Kiru. And for me, I was like, oh, wow, so it is a male name. Oh, because I was always constantly like, had to tell people, no, that's not my surname. It's from my grandmother, but that's about it. What does it mean? I didn't know. And it means a black woman. Like, how beautiful. And that's something I'm just finding out.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is Mwangi?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I don't know. I haven't gotten that far in my quest to know what my name means. So my Mwangi is my dad's name. So I don't know what Mwangi means, honestly. Mm.
So Mwangi is your dad's name?
Yeah. So it's my surname. Yeah.
Your surname. Then you have your grandmother's name, you said you call it.
Yes. So in Kikuyu culture, you are named after your parents' parents. So the firstborn child is named after the parent of the father. And because she's a girl, so she took my grandmother's name on my father's side, and I'm a second born girl child, then I take the name of my mother's mother. And then our last born is a son, my brother. So he took the name of my father's mother. So constantly you have to start with the father's side and then move to the mother's side according to what gender is born after the other.
So that's for the middle name. But the last name, the surname, mm-hmm. that's for all three of you the same?
Yes.
Okay. And where does Ivy come from?
Oh, actually, my mom met a lady who was like her mentor, who was a nurse when she was really young, and she always wanted to be a doctor, and she named me after her. Yeah, I think she was trying to be progressive, because technically I'm not supposed to be called Ivy, I'm supposed to be called Joyce. My grandma's name is Joyce Wakiru. So I'm Ivy Joyce Wakiru Mwangi. I don't say that often. And now I have said it to the whole world.
I feel like this podcast is a baptism, like a re-baptism ceremony where we're claiming our names.
Sometimes I find it really difficult to know what to call people, because one might say, yeah, my name is Michaela, and then you turn around and the friend calls her
Lucky.
Yeah, so you're like, eh? Is that a fake name made up for just for me, or how does that work?
Yeah, people have different names in different contexts, and like, I mean, like if people who I went to primary school with, or if you heard my mother call me, but mostly she would use a whole nother name. You know, I love this. I think I saw it first with the Americans. Like, what is your preferred name? And I think it's a question that more people should ask.
But Guatila, I don't want to let go of the question. Also to you, how did the experience of inheritance change the interaction or the conversations with your own family?
I've been involved in restitution conversations in my professional life now more than ever. And it's more personal than it would have been, I think, if I was getting into it without having gone through the journey of inheritance. Because inheritance did force me to recognize and look for the ways in the loss, to what has really manifested as a loss. The whole restitution conversation is about objects that were taken before colonialism and sent and are living in private collections and Western museums. So that's kind of been a natural place to spend time on and energy on. I am also much stronger. Like, I think before I would express this discomfort, like this conversation that I had with my grandfather about like what was life like before the colonial period, what was a Kamba justice system like, I was a bit shy about some of those things, and I've changed. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how those family conversations also change, mm-hmm. I guess, once people watch the film.
Mm-hmm. Before we go in, Guatila, can I ask just a question just aligned with what Sarika has just asked? What was your feeling? Because remember, somebody wore something that belonged to your father in the movie.
Oh, yeah, it was really beautiful. So my dad was a priest in the Anglican communion, and inheritance is set in a funeral. So we needed a priest, and the priest needed to be, you know, clothed. So I went and looked for my dad's, and my mom had given his cassock and vestments away. And so I went and spoke to the priest who had them, and he was very kind to lend them to us. So it was beautiful to see that and have that purple vestment in the frame.
Besides people, hopefully in the future, in millions watching Inheritance, if someone was to ask you, and here I am being that someone, if someone who has no clue about the current Kenyan culture or what's going on in Kenya, where would you direct them to? Like, Guatila, which books, poets can they familiarize? Is there any music, films?
Blinky Bill is one of my favorite artists. He has an album called Everybody's Just Winging It and Other Fly Tales. It's a wonderful album. It's got so much attitude. Oh, there's also Wangeshi Mutu is an artist that I think everyone should know. based in the US, but also in Kenya. And I mean, has shown work at MoMA, visual artist, just super creative, mad respect for her. Alex Tei is a poet I'm really excited about. She's mixing languages. Her new work, and I think it's in collaboration with others, incantatory healing and embracing a whole self that has different modes of expression. You know, we come from Swahili culture, we come from other language, other kind of incantatory practices. But I was just recently listening to her work and just blown away. Yvonne Awor is always a good one. Yvonne Awor, a novelist. She wrote Dust and Dragonfly Sea. Dust will take you through, which was shortlisted for the Folio Prize, will take you through northern Kenya, but also like this kind of really painful history, but urban Nairobi. Dragonfly Sea will have you living in the coast. Very specific, but also very expansive kind of vision. Yeah, and Lutivina Mwajanja, who will think about childhood, writes also about food. She wrote a beautiful piece about the different sour milks in Kenya, which kind of gives you a sense of like our taste buds and how diverse they are. Also, just even in a thing as simple and you think as basic as sour milk. I'm done now.
Ivy Barbara.
Yes, Wangeshi Muti for me has been somebody very important. She's got some wonderful statues right now, sculptures at the Met. We used it even in the pitch deck for Inheritance, and also her values and her art on ecofeminism just really, really are important to me. Artists, for me, there are a lot of visual artists in Kenya. If you go to any of the artistic spaces, Kona Trust or different art studios, you can connect with powerful art. I do resonate with the work done by Beatrice Wanjiku. Her work has these tones of beautiful dark black and red, and the themes of mother and loss and reclamation comes through her work a lot. As Ngwatilo said, music is also important. And I would like to also shout out to the percussionist, Kasiva Mutua. The soundtrack of Inheritance is all about her. Like, I heard her drumming and I was just like, that's that. And filmmakers, we have powerful, I think Lee J is coming out also with new things. Wanuri, of course, has always been inspirational. The other day, I found an older book by Muthoni Garland, which was, what was it called? Tracking the Footsteps of My Mother's Scent. And even just the title of it, it was done in the past, but I feel everything is relevant right now. There's this space in Karen called the Opportunity Factory. And there's an event that happens every year done by the Nairobi Design Week. It's done Nightingale. She was almost our production designer. She was in the production design class for the making class, but she's one of the co-organizers for that. And they have a website and a platform, and you can find so many powerful Kenyan creatives, young creatives coming out. Was it Spielberg or Scorsese who said the other day that what they're learning and implementing in their filmmaking, they're learning from the young people. And the work I see being showcased through the Nairobi Design Week platform and the Opportunity Factory is just fantastic. So you can tap into that. And from that, you know, you can just go in wherever. Yep. That's it for me right now.
Oh, I just have to plug Open Restitution Africa. I've been working with them a lot. There's some like really exciting people, actually women based in Kenya and South Africa who are thinking about this whole restitution conversation, but also how this intersects with digital things and even AI now. Mm. Elias Mongora is a visual artist who, I don't know how to say maguta maguta in English, but he's thinking about how land moves and the imaginary about land for us. Like really kind of an interesting visual artist to pay attention to. I was in the UK last month and like just looking at all this empty land, and as a Kenyan, speaking as a Kenyan, I was like, who owns this? which is also the double play of inheritance, because, you know, the first thing a Kenyan would think about when you hear inheritance is like property, is, you know, something to contest. Obviously, we went a different direction.
I want to say thank you to the three of you. I learned a lot. New food for thought. Thank you for the vast catalog of recommendations of Kenyan current pop culture and art. That was very helpful in a practical way. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, Ivy. Thank you, Guatilo, for being so vulnerable and open, for sharing.
Yes, thank you for having us, for creating this space as well. Honestly, this is amazing that we can express ourselves and really be vulnerable.
Thank you so much.
In front of the world, in front of you. You are creating this space, and we really appreciate you, Sarika.
Thank you for joining us as we explored the story of inheritance, and we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. If you'd like to explore more stories from the world of Kenyan filmmaking, you can find all our previous episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. And a quick reminder, your support means a lot to us. Please consider sharing this podcast with a friend, following us, or leaving us a review. It would be a real help. Thank you so much. The beautiful music for this podcast was composed by Lucas McNally. Podcast production by the wonderful Pool Artists. A very big thank you to my fantastic colleagues at Some Fine Day Picks and for their continuous support. Thank you to the German Federal Ministry for Economic Cooperation and Development and the great people at the GIZ.